Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm not being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
We're going to start with the Connacht final, Aaron, because I suppose that was a contest for a little bit longer than the one in Munster. Like, I mean, I don't know. What were Galway thinking? You always say, like, if you're an underdog and you're winning, it's usually the losing team that might start a bit of aggro or, you know, get something like that going. Why does the winning team need to do that? They're going in 5 points ahead after a good performance in the first half, and Johnny Heaney decides to start it on Aidan O'Shea in the tunnel. Pissed him off. And, you know, all bets were off at the end of that.
Yeah, sometimes whenever you are the underdog and things are going your way, you can tend to lose the run yourself a small bit. And maybe that's potentially what happened. I would say, to be fair, probably given the experiences in that Mayo dressing room for big games as well, I'm fairly certain that there was going to be a few harsh words with them. They were going to come out pumped up, but I think that just added a wee bit more fuel to the fire for them.
Yeah, because sometimes the favourites might not be up for it. Yeah. You know, indeed, you can be flat. You don't want to give them a reason to get up for it. Like, I mean, you could see Aidan O'Shea's reaction to just a penalty being awarded. He had caught the ball, laid it off to Ryan. Penalty. He celebrated this like he was after scoring a goal. Like, they were clearly fired up coming in out in the second half.
They were, and I think that's just the mark difference in both halves. Was I think their running power isn't in question. You know, it's something that we've all admired for about 10 years, but they were very flat in the first half. I think there were a lot of them sort of maybe waiting on things to happen, and the likes of, well, it was particularly Conroy, Walsh, Comer, they were playing with huge energy, and the rest of the Galway team were feeding off it. But I think just across the board in the second half, it was a completely different animal in Mayo. Like, they got the running game going, and they were coming in their droves from all angles, pace and power from one end of the field to the other. And it was very, very impressive performance for them, because you're probably sitting at half time going, you know, they were burned badly, particularly for the two goals were bad for reasons. One, Walsh burned Aidan O'Shea and even Durkin couldn't get across. But secondly, the one down off the post, like, that's not switched on. Like, you know, it's like the game's never stopped till the ball's out of play. And I think the Sunday game showed a bit last night, like the ball came down off the post and Tommy Conroy's nearly turning the head back up the field. It hasn't gone out of play. Walsh was literally 40 metres out whenever Conroy's taking the shot, and he's the first man in to stick it into the back of the net. So that's a mental switch off from Mayo. And I'm sure that would have really annoyed them, you know, that they allowed stuff like that there to happen. Yeah. Themselves.
In the Mayo defenders' defence, Paul Conroy doesn't miss from there. Yeah. Like, can we cut him a bit of slack? It's a very warm day and you're kind of like, oh God, right, there you go, that's over the bar. And you might get a big breath of air in, and I obviously it's not professional, yeah. But I can understand potentially with Paul Conroy shooting from there?
You probably can, but I think that's the level that they have set that you don't expect it from them. Yeah. I think from your top four down, they'll take a break and they'll switch off. But yeah, your top teams, your elite teams, your Mayos, Dublins, Kerrys, these teams, no, they'll not do it. They'll keep going. They'll start well. They'll play at their pace and intensity throughout. They'll dictate the terms. And I think that's what was missing definitely from them in the first half. Not that Galway got some matchups right. They targeted some people and exploited them. But Mayo just weren't at the pitch that we expect from them.
Yeah, no, that was probably it. Just go back to the tunnel. Nothing will come out of that. It was only pushing and shoving. Like, I mean, there's nothing that needs to be looked into or anything like that. It's just that happened and it was, you know, a bit entertaining and it got Mayo fired up and that's pretty much the end of it.
Give us something to talk about. But yeah, in terms of suspensions and that there, no. You could see there was an official trend to try and stop the two teams now, try and hold one team back for 20, 30 seconds or whatever. But it just got to the stage where you had a few too many people meeting at the angle where the split for both change rooms. But no, can't see anything coming. You'd be disappointed if anything did. Like, you know, it wasn't. I think we've seen a lot worse happening in tunnels where it's clear as day what was going on. But that there, I think Mayo will be all right. They'll have a full hand to pick from.
Because Aidan O'Shea was the main one. Johnny Heaney said something to Aidan O'Shea. I've never seen Aidan O'Shea reacting as angrily as he did, because Mulcairn came in then to Aidan O'Shea and Aidan O'Shea didn't care about Mulcairn. He wanted to get back after Heaney, whatever was after going on there.
And that's really unusual for him, because I suppose the one thing that we've seen as well from Aidan is he doesn't react to anything. And quite often in games you'll see maybe two or three people over pushing, shoving, mouthing him, and he's nearly like standing looking over them as if they don't exist, and that's actually humiliating if you're the man that's pushing and shoving on him, and that's his form. So yeah, whatever happened yesterday, maybe he was disappointed in his own performance. He never got into it maybe as much as what he liked, or maybe it was just Mayo were so flat. Or whatever was said to him. But anyway, it worked. In terms of their whole team, the turnovers he got, the more he built himself into the game, it might be a regret for Heaney at this stage.
Two other ones I wanted to throw at you before we kind of start doing a bit of analysis on the game is Ryan O'Donoghue's disallowed goal.
Scandalous,
wasn't it? He just almost turned his back to him.
My wife was looking at it as well, and she's, why is that a free? Like, what? And I kept like putting it back, trying to say he's just saying he bumped him. She's like, but that's never a free. And in fairness, I'll call it. She plays football, or she watches football. She knows she's done, but she couldn't understand, and neither could I. Like, he just used his body, like, you know, he just shaped himself that he was going to take it on his outside. It was perfect. Like, that's what you want a cute forward to do. So I can't understand it at all. And in fairness to him then, like, he didn't hear the whistle. The keeper didn't know that it had stopped. And a super finish from him then. Yeah. Real composure to put it away. Because he even celebrated it, do you know. But yeah, very, very disappointing. It shouldn't have been disallowed at all. Great diagonal ball across. And he done what, like your Stevie McDonald would have done, you know, shaped his body perfectly, gives him a bit of a nudge, but it's a side on side bump.
Yeah,
it's not,
that's a move.
He doesn't hit him in the back at all. Like, so no, it should never have been disallowed.
No, I agree with that. What about James Carr? That's red card material.
If you don't get took off for that, that's the sort of thing you'd pull a man off for. If he does that there.
I have a theory on this, that James Carr at that stage felt sorry for Galway. Like, he can score, like, he scored that famous goal last year against Galway. They were a well beaten ticket at that stage. I just can't understand how that man didn't want to rattle that net. Was he taking the piss, as in, against the team I respect, I'd rattle the net here, but this is just, look, I'll tap it over the bar. I'm maybe overthinking that, or having a laugh, but why would he not go for a goal there?
I don't know, and Oisín McConville and Co-Coms was equally as disgusted as you were. I'd say there was an expletive about to come out of him, he couldn't believe it. All he had to do was, like, you look at Jack McCarron's goal last week, Conor McManus, show it on one hand, side foot it with the other foot in. Like, the keeper nearly at that. The keeper was waiting to be beat. Like, he was expecting it. He actually shows him his right hand side. He more or less is, he put it in there. Like, so no, from his perspective, he hasn't seen probably a huge pile of game time. The goal you're talking about a couple of years ago down in Limerick, he'd been starting all that year. You know, he was up to the speed of things. Maybe he was just lacking a bit of confidence going through there. Yes, he's not getting as much game time as he would like, but if he wants more game time, he has to stick that. You can't. Yeah. Like, James Horn's not going to say, we took pity in him and we were taking the hand out of him here. He's going to say, stick that in the back. And if he gets a chance against Dublin in 2 or 3 weeks' time, he has to stick that.
Yeah. You know, you have to prove that you're capable of burying
even
that.
For his own that you're going to back yourself to do this. Disappointing. Yeah, he should have put it away. Like, Kerry, you know, didn't take any pity. You know, they were still trying to work the goals yesterday, and, you know, I suppose maybe as much as we like Pádraig Joyce or, you know, whatever, you have to stick that if you're trying to break onto a Mayo team.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's not like Gleeson is a great goalie. He probably would have buried it. Onto the match, like, I mean, this is, you know, like, I mean, a game of two halves, let's be honest about it. How it can change. Obviously, you've mentioned Conroy was cleaning Aidan O'Shea in the first half. Like, Aidan O'Shea wasn't tracking him. Like, Aidan O'Shea was doing some good work around midfield. He's a great turnover on Shane Walsh, and he's getting tackles in, but he wasn't marking Conroy, and Conroy was setting a lot of stuff up. And, you know, Mayo fixed that. They fixed that. They put Aidan O'Shea full forward. They put Cohen on Conroy, I'm fairly sure, and they brought on the two McLaughlins. Game changer. Like, I mean, those four changes were enough, and Heaney pissing O'Shea off and all the rest of them off. Done.
Yeah, and in fairness, you have to give Joyce credit for the first half in terms of the matchups and putting players into space to exploit. Like I said, Conroy, Walsh, Comer were operating in different sections. You know, if you think back to it, you know, they weren't operating as a three really, but they were exploiting whoever they were on massively. James Horan then completely takes over at half time. All the switches work. Mayo take complete control of the game and nullify all the main men. Now, I know there is a bit of a talking point over Shane Walsh getting dragged down that time, and apparently that's why he had to come off. He was holding his shoulder. It was clear.
Did the game show that? I didn't see the game show.
But it's not clear. I don't know.
Because Joyce says he got dumped. I'm picturing from Joyce's comments almost like one of these spear tackles.
Brian O'Driscoll's shoulder one. It's very hard to say because the camera angle that RT showed is from behind the goal at Hill 16. You can see something happens. It's a coming together. I think it's maybe between himself and Lee Keegan. It could have been that he was trying to check Keegan's run. Keegan's trying to get him out of the way. It's just very, very hard to say clearly what happens, but that seemed to have an impact in Walsh. In fairness, Joyce said after the game he had to get a painkiller injection at half time. Yeah. So that would have nullified him, obviously. But the big thing that changed for Mayo is the running power got going, and it come from absolutely everywhere for the duration of the second half. Like, Galway only scored 3 points from frees in the second half. The first, I don't think, I can't remember, it was late on by the time they even got the first free. Tierney got the three of them, the same sort of area, rash enough tackle. The first one was from Lee Keegan, where it maybe wasn't necessary, but Kevin McLaughlin made a massive difference.
And two different, they should be starting. Like, how are they not starting a Connacht final?
Well, that's the thing.
I know we're not watching training and all that, but, like, I mean, are you telling me that young Brian Walsh, that Kevin McLaughlin's not better than him as a wing forward, and that McLaughlin, you know, shouldn't be left half back, who's an outstandingly powerful runner? And that's what their game is built on.
It is, and I would have thought, like, he had a super season last season, had a poor enough All-Ireland final. I would have thought he was mad to get back. And to me, he's on their best 15, so give him as much game time as you can in Croke Park, because you're going to need him in 2 weeks, yeah. You know? But maybe he come on fired up, he come on with a point to prove, and, you know, Horan has him where he wants him now. In terms of he's up to the pitch of it now, and he's made it very hard for him to drop him off. But I think you have to go with your best 15 at this stage. Like, again, you're right, probably we don't know what's going on in training. We don't know. I know there was a lot of COVID issues within the camp. Were they maybe affected? Had they a bit of a hangover where they just didn't feel themselves? That might potentially be something. But I think whenever they come on, it was two totally different performances from them in terms of Owen McLaughlin was just his pace, power, driving up the field. Kevin McLaughlin was all about brains, like, getting himself into the right place at the right time.
And if Aidan O'Shea is in at full forward, Kevin McLaughlin has to start, because he's one of the probably few players who would pride himself on a good kick pass. A lot of them like to run it.
Yeah, he's very much a link player. He's the outlet. He plays flat across that half forward line, where he's always the option for a kick instead of a running game. And if you're an inside forward and you see him getting the ball,
you're breaking.
Depending on which way he turns his body, you know where you're going, and you know you're going to get a quality ball played to your advantage, to your outside. So he does bring a totally different dimension to Mayo. And for me, if they want to take the next step, and that's beating the Dubs in, well, we assume it'll be the Dubs or Kildare in a few weeks' time. He has to be on the starting team because he just offers something completely different. And he doesn't shirk his work back. He's the first man in for his break ball as well. He's just a complete package in terms of what your modern day wing half forward should be.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. So like some of the matchups we're expecting last Thursday, Sean Kelly didn't pick up Aidan O'Shea. They lined up beside each other in midfield. It was like, here we go, that's an obvious one. It didn't happen. It was Lee Keegan. Lee Keegan then was on Shane Walsh, and it wasn't Durkin, which we thought it would be. And it's funny, you mentioned the goal. Like Aidan O'Shea passed, he pointed to Durkin. He says, I'm not entertaining this fella. And Durkin had 2 or 3 yards on him. Durkin was very slow to switch on, wasn't he?
He was, and we laughed last week where we said, if Conor McKenna's coming at you at that pace, you're shouting, you're a man. Aidan O'Shea was shouting straight away, you're a man.
Help me, help.
But again, Durkin, he looked like he was a wee bit of too focused on whoever was inside of him, where for me at that stage, Walsh was the danger. Like, if I'm looking at that situation, I'm cutting across Walsh. If Walsh passes it back out to whoever Durkin was on and he kicks a point, that's fine, but there's no goal given away.
Yeah.
So he'll be disappointed in that, because in fairness to Paddy again,
he's a good defender.
He is. And while he's an attacking halfback, he prides himself on what he does defensively. So that's something that they'll definitely iron out, and I can't see that happening again.
Yeah. James Horan said after the game, we had enough possession to be top. He's talking about the first half. We had enough possession to be level or on top. The last pass was a bit silly at times in the first half. We knew we weren't a huge amount off. We just needed to tweak a few things, and we got a chance to do that. And we know the tweaks, but I think their attitude changed a lot. And I hate to put always good performances down to an improvement in attitude, but in the first half they did have plenty of attacks. It's just maybe they were going in ones and twos, and it just wasn't their running game, which they pride themselves on, just wasn't working.
No, like you couldn't see a clear difference in the athleticism in both teams in the first half.
No.
Because like you say,
and they were playing very similar style, very similar setups.
Yeah,
you know,
it was ones and twos Mayo were going, and whenever Mayo were on, it's at least three of them driving all the time, and they're very good at one man and nearly go ahead, and there's always one man lagging behind that can come across at an angle where he's fixing a defender heading a different direction. That would have happened throughout the second half, didn't happen in the first half. To be fair, that really is a mindset thing. That's, you know, you're getting into the game, you're willing to make the hard runs. I don't know whether it was a psychological thing where the heat, Croke Park being so big, you're maybe thinking, I don't want to gas myself out too early here, and you're that run that you might make after 50 or 60 minutes, you just hold back. But if one person's holding back on every run for Mayo, they're a different team.
Exactly.
It's an option down. It's someone less for Galway to worry about, that's sitting back in the defence, and it has a big difference for them. O'Donoghue did try to play a few like wee dink balls inside over the top and that there, and it just didn't come off. And you could see what he was trying to do, and he was being dangerous in his thought process. But they just didn't hit the target.
Yeah. Tommy Kinraid had a poor first half too, a couple of bad wides, and then improved a lot in the second half too.
He was hesitant nearly in how he was taking on players in the first half. You know, he was stopping and starting as he was taking them on. Second half, he was just going, and that was it. He looks at times like he's maybe a wee bit off balance, or he's unsure of where he's going at, but I love him. I think he's class. He's completely off the cuff. He's so direct, heading towards goal, and he's starting to chip in off right and left foot with scores. So I see him as a player that's just going to keep getting better and better. He's a real excitement machine for Mayo.
Yeah, exactly. You see the likes of Lee Keegan, you see Paddy Durkin, you see Oisin Mullen, you see Matthew Ruan, especially those four, and McLaughlin. You're talking about fellas that can make 500-600 metre sprints, pretty much 100-metre sprints. You're going from nearly a 21 to your 21, and then you have to get back up into your position. They're doing that five times, six times a half, along with the other kind of work that they're expected to be doing is in there as well. Like, I mean, those four or five players have phenomenal fitness levels.
And I think that's where you have to really compliment Horan and in fairness, the managers that have gone before him for them, because Paddy Durkin, like whenever this Mayo team or the previous Mayo team was going really well, getting all Ireland finals, as good as he was the impact sub nearly for them. And then Mullen, Owen McLaughlin, Matthew Ruan. These are all new players that have come in.
But Lee Keegan's still doing it.
No, I have to, Lee Keegan looked as lean and in as good a shape as I seen him yesterday in a long, long time. Yeah. He looks like he's back to himself. The pace he was breaking up the wings, particularly in the second half, even whenever you thought he wasn't even going to get on the ball, he was putting the burners on and going up the field. But all of those boys are conditioned to be top class intercounty athletes at this stage, and they just bring so much to the Mayo game, and they really carry on a huge amount of what we have seen from Mayo in the 10 years previous. And by them doing what they're doing, where they don't have as many top marquee forwards maybe as your Dublin and Kerry's, they just create so many opportunities because they're so hard to mark. Like, I know if you're a defender on the opposition team and you see them coming at the pace that they're coming at, it's very hard for your brain to process. Do I stay with my own man? Do I go with him? Where's the danger coming from here? And to communicate that with those around you, particularly in the surrounds of Croke Park, it is very difficult.
And are opposition forwards are just not able to stay with these lads over the course of a game, and they're grinding them down? Like Galway were just grinded down, maybe, where Galway, like you see the Limerick hurlers just seem to go up a level where Tipperary got tired. Galway, you could see getting tired in the heat. Like, are Mayo doing different training to everybody else? Like, are they practicing bloody 40, 80 metre sprints a night? Or
I can't see it. I honestly can't see it, because you're into county game now. Everyone's sort of operating off the same template, and your strength and conditioning coaches are all talking, and they're all going to the same functions and the same seminars and that there. What I think, in fairness to them, is success breeds success. I think this next crop of players that has come through have idolised and looked up and respected to see what has gone before them. And from what I'm led to believe, a lot of them were filtered through the training system within the senior panel in Mayo long before we seen them even making match day squads, let alone teams. So they've become accustomed to what it takes, how you prepare, how you recover, and they've just fitted in seamlessly. Like, Oisín Mullen was under 20 last year, and you're looking at him yesterday in Croke Park, like, the physical condition of him is incredible. And his driving up the field and his composure on the ball and his ability to take other people, to make the right decision and see who's the best pass. Now, it's only a fist pass he's doing, but he's still making the right decision. He's giving it to someone who's then giving a dangerous pass inside or kicking the ball over the bar. So massively impressive from them. But then again, it's no surprise. Physically, they have been the team that has been able to go with the Dubs for 70, 75 minutes. It's their score ratio and executing whenever the pressure's on from a Dublin defence with their forwards. That,
see, Dublin can match them physically and, you know, with that running game, they can stay with them. Yeah. That's where they come a cropper, that they're probably missing that. They can blow anyone away that's not near that level. You know, they can stay with them, or doesn't have the energy to stay with them, or the drive, or the professionalism, all those things that when they come up against
the willingness to stay with them.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, it still will probably long term come down to that top class forward or two that they are missing.
And as neutrals, as much as you'd love to see them get across the line, just time will tell. At the end of the day, it's just that bit of class and craftiness up front that's what steps the best out from the rest. And if you're being brutally honest at this stage and you're looking at the six forwards Kerry's picking from, Dublin's picking from, you would see Mayo's individually it's just that wee step behind them. But anything's possible with them. Like, for how long have we thought that they're just going to fade away, they're going to disappear? And literally, this is a brand new team. You might have a few people who have hung on, like your Lee Keegan, Aidan O'Shea, Kevin McLaughlin, these boys, but it's...
I think somebody sent me a stat. There was only three players yesterday from the 2017 All-Ireland final team, which would...
Jeremy O'Connor, Aidan O'Shea, and probably Lee Keegan.
And Lee Keegan, probably. Yeah.
That's incredible. Like, that is absolutely incredible.
Turnover to be back in an All-Ireland semi-final.
And to be in the condition that they're in and playing at the level that they're playing at with a brand new team that are just starting out again, like, that's incredible to see that there. Too many of them, you think it takes too long to get here. It takes too long to get people in this condition. They had to have been doing something under the radar with the next crop that was coming through. So that's...
Owen McLaughlin was cycling. Ryan Donoghue was boxing.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So multi-sport.
What do you call it? Dermot O'Connor was poor, but it was great to get a game, from Mayo's point of view, get a game into him and give him as an option in midfield. Like, he made one terrible effort at a point. He tried to kick it off the ground on the bounce and drove it wide. Like, he's capable of doing a silly thing or two like that, but he's a huge player for Mayo that kind of gets forgotten about when he hasn't been there.
He does, and I think the one that always stood out for me and one of his best ever performance, where I think you couldn't have had anything but admiration, was the Newbridge or Nowhere game, where Mayo were sort of in the last legs. It picked up serious injuries that year, but he was incredible that day. Like his effort all across the field. Like, you've always heard about his GPS stats and the kilometres he clocks up in a game, but that day in particular, like whenever Everton was going against him and they were down in personnel, he just kept carrying the fight to them. And he's got something that's very, very likeable as a neutral, to sit back and look and see someone who's willing to put his body through what he is. But you're right, just the simple things and as maybe use of the ball or being a better option in a scoring position was off yesterday. But he's played little or no football this past few months, so we'll give him that yesterday. He's got a good blowout in Croke Park, and I think you'll see a different animal again. He thrives on the big occasion as well, so he'll be well up for an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah,
about it.
Yeah, that'll bring him on. What about Joyce? What do you think, Joyce will stay on? He seems like a very frustrated manager, and often you see, like, I wouldn't blame his tactics too much yesterday, because he wasn't majorly defensive in any way, shape. Like, he played a very similar game plan to Mayo, try and get one lad sweeping, but like no fellas dropping back ahead of the ball. It wasn't a very defensive, it was more a modern type game, you know, where both teams are attacking with a lot of players and both teams defending with a lot of players. Like, the collapse in the second half, collapses like that, I know Mayo lifted it, but it's their lack of belief in the panel, collapses don't usually happen, panels that are going well. I know they haven't been going well. They've won two of their last nine games in league and championship. That was from the start of the lockdown. Like, I mean, do you put it down to fitness? Do you put it down to a lack of belief? Do you put it down? I don't know if you can blame Joyce too much, because it had been going so well. He didn't need to change anything, And then it starts slipping away. Mayo had 1-1 very quickly, and now it's slipping away from you. And, he's moving Walsh and Comer, and he put Conroy maybe in the forwards. And, it's hard to change a game slipping away like that, I suppose.
I hope he does stay on. But I do agree with you. Obviously, as a player, someone I really admired and someone I'd like to see doing well with Galway as well. But he does look frustrated. He reminds me a wee bit of, like, Andy McEntee as well, where he just looks like sort of the world's problems is on his shoulders, and
he's gone very grey in the last 2 years too.
But there's some times, and it's very hard whenever you're stuck in that bubble, but there's times where I don't think it was going as bad as what it was maybe perceived for them. But I think maybe a bit again, he puts so much pressure on himself because he wants it to work so much, for them. He wants to get Galway back to the level that he had throughout his playing career. And I hope he does. I hope he takes time to take a step back and just reflect and realise that there is raw tools for them to work with. Yes, there's plenty, obviously, for them to work on. But they were in an All-Ireland minor final in 19. He had a good under-20 team that got to the semi-final as well. They're going well at under-20 again.
They're missing
yesterday
players too. Like, I mean, McDade is gone. The two Dailies have been out. Like, they're three guaranteed starters and big players. Your centre-back, Dylan McHugh, is not good enough, I don't think, at that level. I think him, just the fact he played for Cara Finn is getting him on it. Like, Daly at centre-back. Daly is as a wing forward.
Tom O'Callaghan as well. I was very impressed with him at minor and under-20.
One or two of them to come in. You could be five or six new players,
So as disappointed as he will be today, and as frustrated as he's probably been since COVID, COVID has hit the country bad, but has hit that Galway team bad, they just haven't got going again. I think he just needs to take a step back, reassess and really put a stamp again on it, because I do feel that there is the raw material there. Like you say, throw in that personnel as well, that they can close that gap, they can get back up to Division 1, and they can go, I suppose, more on the path or the trajectory that they were pre the first lockdown.
So Finnerty went off early too, and he's a good player for them.
He's very good, I like him, and I think he's someone again that will grow into inter-county football. He's a finisher. And in terms of maybe his work rate or his physicality, is something that maybe can improve them. But that can be done. Someone who can win their own ball and stick it over the bar off right and left foot, it's a lot harder to coach that there, and it takes longer in terms of getting someone a bit fitter and a bit stronger. Do you know, the next 6 or 9 months he can come back a different animal in 2022. So I'd like to see Porrick staying on, and hopefully he will whenever he reflects back.
Yeah, maybe get one more year with everybody back and kind of judge him maybe on that performance of the weekend. And this one is easy enough. We don't have time for nominations, but Mathieu Rouen had to get man of the match. Very, very clear. Like, I mean, his goal was a weird one. In no way a man should be scoring a goal from there. Like, but it was a great finish when he got in, and he never gave up on it. He lost the ball at one stage, and I think that actually helped him a little bit, because Galway players looked at it and went, all right, he, you know, and there was players around, Silk was around, and they could have doubled up, and they never did. And suddenly now he's through, and it was a lovely composed finish by him. But he is just, he's relentless. Yeah. He is relentless in his energy and his bombing forward. And midfielders, it's such an advantage to have a very attack-minded midfielder, and you'll stay with him. I remember Ross Munley always said to me, like, a lad will stay with me for 50 minutes, but he won't stay with me for the entire game. You know, when you're that fit,
yeah,
and you can make those runs non-stop, he wear anybody down. He'd make you tired looking at him.
he does. And I think what I liked about him is he ran through, and it was like someone's first goal was like the 70s, where he punt past the ball over the bar. Like, it's something that you very rarely see again. But his goal, from his perspective, was brilliant in terms of what you say. He just kept going, you know, and even whenever it was maybe the odd unorthodox solo, he just kept going again, and couldn't believe his luck had opened up. But he kept it low, you know, and I don't know how many times you see people going in and burying it at a perfect height for the goalkeeper, but he kept it on the ground, ended up going through his legs. But I think from a Galway perspective, like, it was horrible defending, in terms of he broke through 2 tackles the first time, then 2 tackles the second time, and then you had Dylan McHugh and Liam Silk that both could have come across to double up or treble up on him, and none of them did. So that wouldn't be a pretty review if Gaul were meeting up this week. I think from their own perspective, they'll be lucky that they'll all head back to their clubs, and it might be January before that video is brought back up again. But yeah, let's not take away from what Mathieu Rouen did. Top class performance for him, and again, someone that has really taken over a huge mantle in terms of what they had before, with the work rate of your Tom Parsons, Shane O'Shea, and these lads. He's really come in, and he's fairly stamped his own authority, and he's made number 8 his own in that squad.
Yeah, none of them had what he has, the constant threat going forward, you know, that constant bombing and not being tracked and just adding an extra person to the attack. He's really good at that. One other thing, now that I've just reminded, are you surprised Mayo didn't put as much pressure on the Galway kick out? Because Conor Gleeson's a bag of nerves. You can just see him. He's a bag of nerves standing over the kick out. He's ready to be done. And yeah, I thought Mayo could have been a little bit more aggressive on that.
Again, is that cagey? Is that a mindset? It's hard to know what teams, you know, what way they're going to really set up or how hard they're going to go. But one thing that was very noticeable was in the second half, whenever they pressed up and went man to man and made him go long, there was particularly one where he drops out right in front of the tunnel on the Hogan stand side. But as soon as Mayo pressed up, went man to man and made him go long, the ball competes, I can't remember who competes with Mathieu Rouen, but he knocks it down, and I froze it at home. The first 4 people coming in at his foot was the 2 Mayo half forwards in front, 2 Mayo half backs behind, breaks to Kevin McLaughlin straight into his chest, turn, and it's a long ball goes in for Owen McLaughlin, who again, it's a great finish in terms of low into the bottom corner, and Gleeson just manages
save,
to, it's a super save, it's just reactive, he gets his foot to it and puts it around the corner. But Mayo can do it anyway, you know, if they give it to you short, they don't commit right into the 21, they'll still set themselves, they'll take a step off, you know, still within the 45 metre lane where they're all ready to tackle, and then they'll put maximum pressure on, and there's nobody gets out easy. Or if they make you go long, they are the first men to the break ball.
They're turning around and heading to the
sprinting,
the land area.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Sprinting, where they're going to get the break ball, or if they don't get the break ball, they're going to get a piece of somebody else. There's going to be physicality put on someone. If they're going to have to be fouled, they'll be fouled, but they'll not be runners heading up the field unchecked, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's all coached. They're a well-coached team, aren't
absolutely
they? Like, I mean, there's no
absolutely
doubt about that. James Horne deserves a lot of credit. Mathieu Rouen had a good interview after the match. He had to be cut short because the Mayo crowd, he couldn't hear Marie Crowe's questions because the Mayo crowd were going mad. It actually wasn't a sellout. Are you surprised at that with the Mayo support? I was surprised to hear it wasn't a sellout. I don't know what the official attendance was, but they definitely said it wasn't a sellout.
I find it very hard to believe with Mayo that even they wouldn't have took 18,000 themselves to that game. You know, I know of a few Cross McLean or Armagh players that made it to the game and got themselves a ticket, so there had to be some spares popping around for neutral. So yeah, very surprising, because whatever, but maybe I don't know how much belief there was within Galway that they could do it, but Mayo, you would have thought that, you know, they'll go to a game anywhere. So the fact that they were allowed go, there was tickets there for them to go and they didn't sell it out, it's a surprising one here.
Yeah, maybe they were pissed off it was Mikael Park was taken off them or something like that. We don't know. Right, we'll leave it there on the Connacht final and we'll come back after this and we'll look at the Munster final. So talk about revenge. They had to wait a year, Kerry did, after the kind of embarrassing loss to Cork last year. But they got the revenge anyways, Aaron. There's no doubt about that. The highest ever provincial final victory by Kerry over Cork. Absolutely, 22-point destroyed them. So, like, I mean, you know, they had to wait. They had to wait long enough. But they got the revenge and they got it fairly convincingly.
It's hard to believe that Cork knocked them out of the championship last November. It's... I wouldn't say shameful, like, but it, to have the talent that they have, granted, right, throw the weather into things last year, and we've talked an awful lot about tactics and that there, but...
Weather and tactics.
Yeah, it's just... Yesterday was a ruthless execution, and I think what stood out for me was Sean O'Shea, even whenever he gets a goal, the game's over at that stage, but he's coming, sprinting back out, fist pumping, pointing at people as much as to say, like... We owe them this, like, do you know.
And he allowed himself a smile as though he meant business.
He did, but as soon as I seen him with that smile, it was the image, all that came into my head was the lashing rain in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, pitch dark behind him and him standing with his hands in his face as much as saying, has this just happened to us? Because they had no time to react from the goal last year. Cork obviously started well, but two scores after the first water break, Kerry just blitzed them from absolutely everywhere.
It's game over. Can you believe they scored 4:22? David Clifford didn't get a point from play. He got 1 point from a free. No, he missed a goal. He missed maybe 1-2 that you would put your house on him getting. He didn't have a good game against Cork the year before either. Is there something here, Clifford, with Cork? Maybe it's you give it the credit to Sean Meehan yesterday anyways, who, you know, he did a brilliant job on him.
Absolutely top class performance from him, you know, and I suppose what we all talk about is you need two or three men back to be covering in front of him. Like, to have the belief in himself, I suppose, not even the trust, to have the belief that he was capable of going out and doing a job, and doing it, you know, was absolutely class to see. And he's another young fella. He's really only finding his feet at that level as well. But just stuck to him everywhere, made the right decisions all the time, put him under pressure whenever the time was right, showed him down different avenues. Yes, there's opportunities that Clifford should have scored, like the goal opportunity, while Micheál Martin, you know, does well to get his body in the way and to hold on to it. I was surprised he didn't show, I know he likes to bury them, but I would have thought he would have showed a wee bit more composure just given the angle he was coming across the goal in. But maybe that's a scary thing then, you know, they score 4:22, David Clifford doesn't score from play, he has a bad day, and they're still capable of that. So it's probably a perfect scenario for Peter Keane and Kerry heading into an All-Ireland semi-final, in that it's not going to happen in 2 days in a row, he'll ensure that, but from whoever comes out of Ulster next weekend, maybe that's another scary prospect to look forward to.
I thought he was after getting taken off, it turned out it was just a blood thing because he was back on again, but I was trying to analyse, was that the right move to take him off, or was that, you know, but as it turns out, it wasn't even a talk about. One thing that just on Sean Meehan, there's a lot of people's kind of have this idea in their head that to go out and mark a David Clifford, you have to hit him, you have to mount at him, you have to pinch him, you have to do all these things, knock him off his game. Sean Meehan just got along with his business quietly, efficiently, no trash talk, no bullshit, just marked him good and tight. And none of the mind games. Kind of, I think it was a good lesson for a lot of players who think that, you know, the Ricey McManaman type cornerback is the kind of future of, you know, how you deal with brilliant corner forwards. A lot of the time you don't need to piss these lads off because that can work against you.
Yeah, and in fairness, you know, it probably was more of your old school type defending. You know, where he just went out and did his job. He had belief in himself. He trusted himself that he was capable of doing it. And that's very admirable, you know. it's easy to think you have to go down the other road. It's probably a less classy road to head down. But I think that's what really stood out for him yesterday. And I suppose I know myself, particularly the team I grew up in, you would have had Andy Mallon, would have been a similar type player. I'm sure you have your Joe Higgins and every county. I suppose if you think back, the person who thrived in this one-on-one situation, the one-on-one battle, they weren't afraid of space in front of them. Granted, they wanted a wee bit of help, whenever someone could get back. But, they weren't calling for people to come back and help me out. Someone stand in front of me, block the space for a ball coming through. Just your good old-fashioned traditional defending. And it was great to see. And you would hope that plenty more people, because there was some aspects of defending in both games, the Cork and Kerry and Mayo and Galway, where there was situations where it was all it would have taken was a bit of just old-fashioned know-how of seeing where the danger was, cutting across and helping a teammate out, blocking a space whenever someone has left it that we didn't see. And I think that's one aspect that, without bringing back mass numbers to help out in defence, that just defenders can maybe start thinking a wee bit more old school, maybe looking at a few more old-fashioned videos. And I'm only talking your 90s, 2000s, of just seeing where danger is and adapting a wee bit better. But in terms of a one-on-one individual contest, what Sean Meehan done yesterday, I'd highly doubt that you'll see a better job done over the next few years than David Clifford.
Yeah, I think it was Gordon Kelly who Clifford said was his hardest marker. Clare, cornerback, who's retired now. I think he might have to upgrade that after yesterday. There's no doubt. Brian O'Bugley then scores the goal. He's the one that missed the goal last year in Porkakeeve. All these ghosts were kind of, demons were banished. He got the goal that set Kerry on the way, and he moved across onto Brian Hurley as well, which is a big talking point in the game. I can't believe Cork won when they had a Matthew, Mark, Luke and John on their team. Did you hear that in the commentary? I had to laugh. I thought it was a good one.
Yeah, there's only so much that divine intervention can do for you. Whenever you have Kerry forwards on that song, the games in Clarny and the sun shining, there's no amount of mass. There's a lot to be said for a good mass, but...
Yeah, no players can save you.
Nothing going to be done yesterday.
Here, Camira, I wanted to ask you about the Clifford. There was a penalty late on the game. Now, it meant nothing at that stage, but this is going to be the frustrating thing. So he's running through on goals. Mark Collins takes him down by the neck. It's a clear goal scoring opportunity, and it's just outside the penalty box. And of course, Desi got it arseways on the commentary, and I'm surprised at Canning, really, because it's a new rule this year and they should be on top of it. They said, well, it was outside the box, so it wasn't a penalty. Completely wrong. Completely, completely wrong. Like, if it's inside the D or the 20 and it stops a clear goal scoring opportunity, that should have been a black card. A sin bin for Collins, and it should have been a penalty. I was just disappointed to see that not given, considering the fact that it's a new rule, and our players going to look at that, watching on television, think, is this rule gone? It couldn't have been any clearer that this was one of those examples.
So sometimes it's one where they're nearly too far ahead, they don't need it, but that's not the point. If it's there to be given, you just have to give it, whether there's a point in the game or 22 points in the game. So if it's clear and obvious, it's a penalty, it's a black card, and move on. There shouldn't be any chat about it at all. It was mind-boggling that it didn't go ahead.
Yeah, it definitely was. I suppose Desi probably didn't have the greatest day at the office. He picked Sean O'Shea as the man of the match, and I'd say it was Tomás O'Shea overruled him in the studio and just went, no. Because he had just given the man of the match in the 72nd minute to Sean O'Shea, even though Paddy Clifford was by far clear the man of the match. And then all of a sudden they're interviewing Paddy Clifford. So we don't know behind the scenes who overruled him or what happened there.
Yeah, well, the only thing I would say from that there is generally they do leave it to the co-coms to pick it. They'll say to you with a minute or two to go, just give me a quiet whisper who we're going with here. There definitely was, unless somebody who was down on pitch side and ended up picking the wrong person thought they'd Sean O'Shea. I don't know, but yeah, strange one.
Definitely was. Rory Dean got a red late on. Again, you see this in low. How many times will you see this? Somebody's who really pissed off, kind of a battling player. He's gone off the boil a good bit, Dean, actually. But, punch back. Nothing major in it. More of a really frustration at that stage.
Yeah, it has to be frustrating because, again, it was on Tommy Walsh. And to be fair, he's not the sort of person who's going to be trash talking to you, I wouldn't imagine, or trying to rub a scoreline into you. So he looked like he was making a wee bit of contact with him. Frustration got the better of Rory Dean and he lashed out. Again, you couldn't see really clear how hard a strike it was, whether it was an elbow or a punch to the gut. But same thing, if you raise your hand, you do anything these days and you're caught by an official, you're gone. So it just, I think it just compounded the misery on Cork yesterday.
So there's a similar theme with both these matches. You know, Galway obviously took to half time to collapse. Cork took till the first water break to collapse. Now, how can you go for being so good for 18 minutes? Like, I mean, they were really good. And if I was doing live co-com on that game, I'm glad I wasn't, because I would say Kerrier don't look at it at all today.
Yeah.
Cork look up for it. Kerrier very wasteful. And, you know, we could have a real game on our hands here. That's exactly what was going on my head. You know, thankfully you're just
selling the farm after 18 minutes.
So, like, I mean, that's what it looked like, though, right? It looked like we had a right game on our hands here.
And it was the scores that Cork were getting. It was the movement, it was the pace and enthusiasm that they had in their play, was great to see. But to me, that just strikes me of, I don't know how much they genuinely believed they were going to do it. It was once Kerry started to get a bit of a foothold, whenever things were going well and Cork started, you know, like a freight train, I suppose the narrative was, this is going to be Kerry's game, and Cork for so long you can use, you know, well, we'll prove them, we could do it last year, we can beat them at underage, you know, we can do this. That wears off a bit, and once the tide started to turn slightly, the floodgates opened completely on them. So that tells me, deep down, I don't know how much the self-belief was there that we're going to hang into this game, we're going to chip over a few frees, you know, we're going to create a few simple scoring opportunities, we're going to do what it takes to get to half time now, and we'll regroup and we'll come again at the start of the second half. It was just a complete collapse. 1-6 in 18 minutes, like I said, quality scores causing all sorts of problems to carry all over the place from midfield forward. But yeah, Ronan McCarthy, I'm sure he was scratching his head. Even with him half time come round, I'd say he couldn't believe what was just after happening, given how well they had started. But I suppose their biggest issue was always going to be racking up enough scores that was going to beat Kerry if it went to a shootout. And as Kerry started to turn the gears, they ended up, I think it was about 110 even just by half time, where at one stage they were 5 points down coming into that first water break. You know, so it was a huge momentum swing for them.
Like, talk about their start though, because like they were giving some lovely balls into Hurley was cleaning Foley out of it. Foley's not the worst man marker, but he's not a natural man marker. He's a, you know, probably played full back a lot at Minor, and he's a very fast player, but probably not your sticky, you know, I love this kind of thing. Yeah. More of a kind of a, you know, able to play football. Like, I mean, Brian Hartnett got a point then, which was just a real running point, and they were running through them, they were kicking the game, and it's like Brian Hurley's goal came from two kick passes, a turnover on Paul Murphy, straight down the field. And this is an example of any team that plays Kerry, and I think any team at the moment, because they're attacking with so many players, full-time sweepers are gone. You know, you're getting somebody back into position. But if you have a slow build-up, I say it on the show all the time, you're not getting one-on-ones. Your full forward line will thank you if you kick the ball more.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is a fact. And that goal proves it. The Gini goal proves it. Paddy Clifford with a long one. We'll talk about that in a second. But, like, the Cork goal, and this is why when you see Dublin playing Kerry, they move it down so fast. You see a great open game with you know, one-on-one duels at the other end, and you wonder, how does that happen? It's because they get the ball down the field faster than the retreating players.
I think that the Cork goal is one of the things that, just like you, I got myself a wee bit carried away, because we tend to see a running game from them. But they did move it through the boot at that stage. Like, they had a huge amount of players that had all tracked back, because it was a lot of Kerry defenders who were carrying the ball that stage. It was Paul Murphy on the opposite 21. It was Mike Breen who had passed him the ball. You know, so a lot of Cork players were back, but they didn't get the running game going. They let it go through the foot. And obviously, Hurley took his man on, finished it really well. But as good as a goal it was for Cork, I think it could be one of the best learning experiences that Kerry have got. You know, the 4:22 that they scored yesterday, that's what we would expect. The goal that they conceded, I think they can learn so much from that there, and I think they're going to have to, because Paul Murphy was named the centre-half back. It was him that lost the play. But if you think back to your attacking centre-half backs, in your old-fashioned sense, so your Keith Barrs, Glenn Raines, whatever, as soon as they drive up the field, a midfielder comes and sits in centre-half back and covers him. He's not a sweeper. He's just playing centre-half back, because your centre-half back's gone up the field. Jason Foley shouldn't have got burnt on the end line, because the end line's another defender. All he has to do is show him over the end line or get goal side where he turns him back and gives away a point, worst case scenario. But
he got beaten on his inside.
He did.
Now Hurley had cut inside for a point, so unless he was worried about that and he just got the step on him.
But give away the point.
Yeah.
Don't give away a goal. Like, do you think Johnny Cooper's letting him cut in along that end line? You know, he's pulling him down or he's turning him back to tap the ball over the bar. But where I think the big learning, well, obviously a video analysis will show Jason Foley, use the end line, you know, show him down, give away the point if we have to, don't give away a goal. But Jack Barry had actually got himself to centre half back at that stage. But just a bit like we spoke about Paddy Durkin earlier, he's too slow to see the danger. He's too slow to get across and double team and try and help Jason Foley. And that's something that they can really improve him. Like even Brian Boyd, he could have cut across because I think it was Michael Hurley was in the far corner. Again, if Brian Hurley passes the ball across to him, he's just tapping it over the bar. It's not a goal that you're giving away. So that's very disappointing from a Kerry perspective, but a great lesson to learn where it didn't cost them dearly. So Cork, I think, might have done them another favour in that regard whenever we're looking at the bigger picture down the lane here.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then obviously the Sean O'Shea goal was from a very similar thing. Powter ran up, got dispossessed. Yeah. Now you have a turnover. How quickly can you get that turnover ball down into the forwards? It was a quick free to Paddy Clifford, a beautiful outside of the right. Sean O'Shea completely free. Why was he completely free? He cheated. Now, he didn't follow Powter, right? So he just cheated. And we say this on the show so many times. Why don't you just cheat the other time? You don't always, a lot of these runs forward are to drag you with them, right? So you must have enough players back there, you know, to look after that. And you don't have to cheat every time. That could be lazy, like work. Yeah. But take a chance the odd time. That's I know from being wing back loads of times, and the forwards have cheated on me and it's worked out against me, and now I'm straight away under pressure. You know, I don't like it. You know, you're rattled by it.
I'm fairly certain that was something that was well and truly spoke about in the Kerry camp, because the talk was how Powter had got the better of him last year. Powter knew his game inside out from playing one of the UCC. The one thing we know about Sean O'Shea is, like, he's up there, he's your best centre half forward in the country. He doesn't shirk work rate or responsibility. He's not afraid of that. He will do it. But for me, that was perfection. Just the odd team, just gamble, just say, do you know what? Someone else keep an eye on him, pick him up. But as soon as we get this turnover, get that ball get that ball straight to me, and I'll not be too long making sure Powter doesn't run off the field. Like, if you're saying in a foot race of a sprint, who's going to win all day long between Sean O'Shea and Powter? It's Powter. But Sean O'Shea is thinking, right, well, what have I got? What can I do that's going to put him in the back foot? How can I make him think? How can I impose my game on him? I'll cheat the odd team. And as soon as we get a turnover, ping the ball up to me and I'll do the rest. I'll make sure we get a score.
Yeah. And I was delighted to see it. I was delighted to see it, honestly.
Not if you're attacking wing half back.
Well, you see, I was a forward too, so like, I liked the odd sheet from the other way around as well. But the Sean O'Shea, just on Sean O'Shea, his goal, right, it was a terrible loopy pass from Paddy Clifford. But we saw in the Donegal Derry game, Benny Heron missing an easier chance than that, putting it off the post. O'Shea got up really highly and didn't try to bat it in, just cushioned it.
Yeah.
To get, like, that looked easy. But when you think to Benny Heron's one, that's not as easy as Sean O'Shea made it look.
No, it wasn't. It was a good finish. And as soon as I seen it looping up, I thought it's going over his head, or he's going to flick it over the bar. There's no way he's getting it in, but he does really well to finish it. But it was just his drive. He was getting in there. Again, at that stage, the game was over. Sean O'Shea was making sure that game was over. Do you know, he was laying down the message for last November, for the weeks that's coming ahead. We're here, we mean business this year. And again, another massively impressive performance from him. He's someone that I think, as neutrals, you know, you couldn't get sick of looking at him in action. So top class performance, and someone that really has the whole Kerry team revolving nearly around him at this stage.
Yeah, he's absolutely outstanding. Mark White came on at half time, right? And this wasn't picked up in the commentary that I heard anyways. Apparently Micheál Martin was injured, which I wasn't sure about, because I was going to start giving out about this, that Micheál Martin was going long with all his kickouts. And we spoke last Friday, that's the sensible thing to do against Kerry, especially with their incredibly aggressive press. Now, they can't get that aggressive press on every time, so there are short kick out opportunities. Micheál Martin didn't take any of them, just got it out long. I've no problem with that. Kerry probably, you know, got to grips with them and started doing really well on them. And, you know, I think the stat I was reading, what, they scored 2-4 from Cork's kick outs. Now, you know, they're kick outs to midfield, right? So sometimes you see they scored that after kick outs, and that's the goalkeeper's fault. Like, how can you not say that was Ian Maguire or Hartnett or whoever's out there? That's not the kick-out's fault, because he's got an instruction from the management team to kick it out that side or down the middle. That's not the goalkeeper's fault if you're losing those kick-outs. That's the midfielder, half-forwards, like, that they can't do what Mayo did and swarm an area and have a plan around that, right?
If you're going long, ideally, number one, Ian Maguire catches the ball, you build your platform from that. But if he doesn't, the first man is... Like, that's your kick out. You know where it's going. Yeah. Like, everyone has a signal. The keeper's making eye contact. You know the area of the field that's going into. So modern day football, you're centre half back and wing half back and that side. You're centre half forward and wing half forward. They're crashing that break ball. So you want Maguire to catch it. You want us to pick up the break ball if we're the players is coming in. Or worst case scenario, it's a car crash. Somebody's getting hit somewhere to try and dislodge the ball again, to slow up play, to make sure that you're giving your team enough time to get our shape again defensively. You can't put that blame on a goalkeeper.
No.
Because at the end of the day, his job...
It's turned into it though, isn't it?
Yeah, but
Restarts now. And it's all the goalie's fault if he can't find the man.
If he's told where to put the ball out, he puts it to that area. As an outfield player, that's where you have to accept responsibility. I know myself, if the ball's dropping over my head to the right half-back position and I'm playing at five and then my man's winning the ball, well, that's my fault. That's my job, is to be at the foot of my midfielders and they'll be letting me know it's a break ball. It's nothing to do with the goalkeeper. He's done his job. It's up to us, you know. You can't put Everton on a plate. This is championship football. This is provincial titles that you're playing for, or All-Ireland titles. You have to put your body on the line and get in there. And like I said, worst case scenario, if you don't win it, disrupt them, hold them up, slow them up as much as possible to make sure that defensively you're in good shape, push them back slightly to make them maybe come down the opposite side of the field. But no, it's not going a black mark against a goalkeeper. Once it goes out the field, it's all to play for in terms of your outfield positions.
On Micheál Martin going long nearly all the time, like, I mean, there is a point where Kerry won the second quarter 1-8-2. There's a point in that here now where he should lose a contact or do some sort of, you know, we saw none of that from Cork. Like, they were slipping away from them here, you know, like, and they were slow to identify that. So then they go into half time 1-5 up, 1-8-2 points with nothing really, you know, I call it cynical or whatever you want. 3-3 to no score, nothing.
Yeah.
Didn't even get a bit of a, I don't know, even get a bit of a row going maybe, or just break up the play, stop the play, do something to I don't know, knock this momentum off its stride.
I think there's a confidence that comes with feeling you can do that. And I think that's big game experience. And I don't know whether that Cork team have it, because they haven't been competing at the top level. They're not operating like at Division 1. It's been a while since they're operating at Division 1. It's a while since they've been operating your All-Ireland semi-finals and finals. So, granted, they're doing well at underage, your set minors, 20s and that there. They don't have the big game experience where you can say, yeah, we can just slow this game down. We can play this at our pace. And you know what? I think even if you just turn it back to the Munster final last year, where Tipperary were bringing really, you know, obviously a bit of quality inside with Quinlivan and Sweeney and that, but it's a lot of fire and brimstone stuff. It was getting in your face, as it was physical contact. They couldn't turn it at that stage. So it's game management is one key area that they really fell down on. And I'd be very surprised if it's something that they didn't communicate or plan for, because generally everybody does. You know, you have to have a get out kick out. You have to.
Yeah.
Whenever we've conceded a goal, a couple of points, if the game's running away from us, there has to be one kick out where we just need to get this. And it's a set play from your kick out to full forward where everybody's involved in it, because there's no point in working this kick out whether it's a short one and where do we go to next and Everton's off the cuff, because that's not really solving the problem. So I'd be very surprised if they didn't have something. It turns out, well, it looked like they didn't yesterday, but just sometimes it's very hard to have that composure to go and execute. It's alright working it and walking through and training, but doing it in the white heat of championship football in Killarney whenever a game's running away from you, it is a different story, granted. But you have to have a get out of clause kick out where everybody's in sync, where we just get a score the other end of the field, just to give it a breather, get the ball down that end, camp up that half for a couple of minutes to give our defence a bit of a breather and get a bit of shape back into the game.
Yeah, it seemed to be that way. Like, I mean, it's hard to know where Cork go from here, really. Like, I mean, it's a terrible hammering. Ronan McCarthy said after the match, he said, like, they were kind of a bit betwixt and between, he said. You go defensive and keep the score down at that stage, or do you keep going for it and leave yourself open? And I can feel some sympathy for that. Like, I mean, you know, the game was over after the first Kerry goal in the second half, and then it turned embarrassing. Like, I mean, do you go with, like, Tipperary and go with two sweepers and just try to keep the score down? Would Cork people accept that? Is that better than a terrible hammering? You know, a lot of this is hindsight stuff, but, like, a hammering like that doesn't help that team at all.
It doesn't, but I think... stop the video analysis at halftime. I think the biggest learnings that they can make is from the 18th minute to halftime. I think they showed enough in the first 18 minutes to show that they have raw tools that they can trouble Kerry or the likes of Kerry for a period of time. It's the game management in between. How did we go from scoring 1-6 to scoring 2 points? We'll say, even if we just talk about a point for the rest of the half, like, what went so badly wrong? There's so many learnings that they can take from that period of the game, in terms of whether it was slowing it down, whether in terms of is their own kickouts, whether it's, you know, they're sucking more men out to the middle of the field, where you're making it more of a battle just for 5 or 10 minutes to just give yourself a bit of respite nearly. That's for me. He said once the goal went in the second half, game's over, it's completely gone. But from the 18th minute on to half time, if I'm Ronan McCarthy, I'm sitting and I'm going over that and over that and over that and saying, how can we stop this from happening again, to know that we can take a game to half time or beyond? Because the self-belief was completely gone. I don't think, no matter what he said at half time, it was gone.
Yeah.
The game was over from them at that stage. So it was the damage that was done in that second quarter that they really need to build on and improve it.
I think that's it. And I think when you have Kerry in their flow, maybe even the first 10 minutes of the second half do something potentially different, you know, to knock that flow and maybe have Kerry at the first water break going, well, they're now putting two lads, you know, and they'll try and figure that out and then maybe go, you know, go back. Or I didn't see anything like that. I thought Luke Connolly was terrible yesterday. He scored a great point, but like, he had it in his head that I have to give a kick pass here. He had 1 point on and he gave a dreadful, he gave two balls over the end line for passes, one off the outside, then one with his left, like a kick across to Brian Hurley. There was a point off your left there completely. It's like he had it in his head, I'm the playmaker and I'm giving a kick pass no matter what.
Yeah, to me, he can execute them passes out the field, but to me, he's a sharpshooter. He's more dangerous around goal, where he's just getting a shot, turning, or getting the ball, turning, having a shot, because his work rate or his physicality isn't suited for what's happening out the field. You know, he can be too much of a liability nearly, in terms of his man could have free run at the game. So for me, if that's where he was told to play, which obviously you have to assume it is, he's in the wrong area of the field. That's the problem for his skill set.
But they've no kick passers. So he's out there for a reason, because they feckin' don't. Maguire, Hartnett won't kick pass.
Well, Mark Collins is an awful miss for him in that regard, because he's a link player and he's a terrific passer.
He's a footballer,
ball.
Yeah.
He's a terrific passer of the ball.
You look at their player, look at their half back line. Like, Powter's not going to kick pass. Maddie Taylor's not going to kick pass. Kylie, to be fair, the new lad, Keane Kylie. He kicked one in the first half, good one off the outside of the left. But, like, I mean, you have Rory Dean is not noted for it, he's a runner. Like, Luke Connolly's out there to kick pass because they feck all else to be able to do it. Like, they need to find somebody. I'm looking at that Cork team and looking at these new players coming through, and to me they look ordinary enough, Aaron. Like, they don't, like, who's coming through off the under 20 team that you go, he looks a right bit of stuff now?
They just seem to have an awful lot of the same type of players coming through, where you're thinking back to your strong runners.
Sean Meehan aside now.
Yeah, but you're thinking your Paddy Cassans, John Miskellas, these boys who are strong, athletic runners from half back again. Granted, I suppose that Cork team, the one they all earned in 2000, and that's, they were more a running team, they weren't a kicking team. But they always had that option with the likes of your Paddy Kelly on your half forward line, that he was your outlet to win ball and give that nice ball to a forward's advantage on the inside lane. Mark Collins does give them that, granted, but Mark Collins needs someone to give him the ball, you know, and that is definitely something that they do need to create, because the way football is now, like you say, where you have 12, 13 people working up the field, you need to be able to bypass a lot of people from your own defence. Like, one good foot pass now if you're being counter-attacked and you turn over, one foot pass, you could end up kicking the ball over maybe eight of your opponents.
Yeah.
And you're on the far 45, and it might be a 2-on-2 or a 3-on-3 situation. It doesn't happen a huge amount of times, but you need someone who has the vision and the quality to execute that.
Like, is there even a situation where you have the 12 or 13 back, or even 12 back, and you have a forward up there, and like, there's a huge disconnect. Even if you kick it over all those players and have someone turn around the other way and run onto it.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much room for offensive kick passes, I think, and that's it. You're cutting out so many players because somebody has to sit down and think. The whole play is moving up and down the field like a game of basketball for a lot of the game.
Yeah.
A lot of the Mayo-Galway game was that. You know, Aidan O'Shea might have stretched it a bit when he went in full forward. But, like, I mean, that's how it's working. So what happens when nearly every player on the field is up in one end? There's loads of space to run into, you know, coming out of that for a ball over the top maybe or something. Like, I mean, there's ways to think about stuff like this.
We see something that's really come into the game is the double back on the inside lane where the ball's been fisted over the top. Similarly, all you're looking for is a 30-40 metre foot pass just over the sort of 45-65 metre lane.
To a Gavin White maybe,
exactly,
who's taking a chance.
Just hairing off at pace into open territory. That kicking game, if and when it is on, or if that's what your team wants, you always need somebody who's willing to hold, has the discipline to hold the half-forward lane. Because,
well, that's the ideal scenario. Now, I'm creating a situation where, feck it, you're trying to hold a lad and his man's gone up and he's sucked in and he's being trying to be honest. Like, you could do the cheat, like Sean O'Shea and that. But if you don't do a cheat, there's a massive gap then to the one, maybe two forwards.
Yeah, and again, that's just where it is. It's a good scenario we were talking about where you're not looking to go up the middle with it, but you're just looking at someone who's breaking up the sideline, breaking to the wing, and you have someone who can just lift their head and show a wee bit of composure to know that they're not spooked by all the numbers that they see around them, and they have the ability to play a ball out into a pocket of space and let whoever it is on, let them do their thing.
Yeah, could be something in that. Performance of the weekend in this game, I think it's very easy. I'm sorry, Desi Dolan, but like, I mean, it wasn't Sean O'Shea, even though Sean O'Shea was very good. Like, it's not like that was a ridiculous kind of call, because he was very good. But Paddy Clifford was head and shoulders above everybody else. Jeez, he was involved in everything. Like, this lad, he's just gone to another level of a player now, because this is a Munster final now. You know, it's his first year. You're looking at Clare, you're making excuses for that, Tipperary, things like this. Is Cork in a Munster final, and he destroyed Cork, and he was outstanding the whole way through the game. Even when Kerry weren't going well, he was setting up that goal for David. He got a point himself. You know, in the first quarter, he was going really well when it was a good contest. He's strong as a bull. Like, he's strong as an ox.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at it, I compare him. He's got everything Stephen O'Brien has, and I rate Stephen O'Brien highly. Stephen O'Brien's downside is a bit like Kevin McManaman, plays with the head down, can't see a pass. He's everything Stephen O'Brien has. He can take you on, he's fast, he's strong as a bull, but he also lifts his head up and is an incredibly creative and a brilliant, brilliant kick passer. And he can kick points. He's almost flawless.
To me, what I feel, he's given this new Kerry team the same sort of spike as Paul Galvin gave Kerry back in 04. And I know from reading his book, like, he was fairly pissed off seeing Kerry lose against Armagh in 02, Tyrone in 03. Paddy Clifford's probably a similar type player, and he's very, very combative. Like you said, he's physically strong. He's not shirking responsibility in terms of work rate. He'll take contact if contact's there. But he also has the scoring threat. He has the passing threat. He has the full package, but he is playing like a man with a chip on his shoulder that I think a few things. He's maybe a bit browned off over, you know, saying the Dubs maybe go so well and he wants to make a stamp in this team. But I think he also looks like a man who's saying, I should have been here earlier. I should have been playing inter-county football. Maybe someone didn't have the same belief on him. Maybe his game has developed hugely. But I'd be very surprised that someone is as good as he is if he wasn't close to it, you know, this past few years. Like, even last year, he only came on at the very, very end of the game against Cork. From the first league game this year, he has not dipped in performance at any stage against anyone. And there's only so long you can keep saying, it's only against such and such, it's only the league, it's only whoever it is in the championship. It doesn't matter, because he has to have the desire and the energy levels to go out and do what he does. And then he has the class to pick off, whether it's his scores or his pass and his vision and his willingness to back himself in terms of giving long ball inside for someone who is, I know he's older than David, but inexperienced at that level.
Yeah.
Absolutely class, and has added something completely different to them. He'd be a nightmare to mark now.
If you're
an attack minded wing half back, he's just giving you a world of problems in dangerous scenarios that you can't really leave him. Like, you'd be looking at someone who's going to nearly mark you, who's someone's just going to run up and down the field.
He'll track you. He's honest enough to track you, and then he'll come back at you.
He'll torture you going the other way as well. Do you know? So
he's hard. Yeah. He's flawless. The only thing at the moment he's player of the year candidate, but we've seen Stephen O'Brien 2 years ago was that until All-Ireland semi-final. We saw Jamie Brennan light it up in Ulster a good bit, and then, you know, didn't kind of do it when he came down to Croke Park. Like, yeah, I just hope that when he gets up to Croke Park, that he continues on that form, you know, because like he has added that extra dimension. Because you have to remember, forget about last year's only one game. The year before, you're looking at a Spillane or an O'Connor playing that wing forward. Gavin White in the All-Ireland final got destroyed by Jack McCaffrey.
Yeah.
That was a problem position for Kerry in that they had five good forwards, but that they weren't sure what to do with that other one.
Yeah.
Now they have a Stephen O'Brien Mark II, which is a demon for work, loves to score, only he has an extra string to his bow than Stephen O'Brien, like I was saying.
Yeah, like I would have felt, you know, at the start of the league this year, having obviously seen Paddy playing for East Kerry and that there, Killian Spillane will be back in there. Do you know, they'll just go with their best out and out forwards, but it's clear what Peter Keane wants. He wants his workers in those half forward roles, but last year he wanted workers that were coming back, absolutely no danger to a scoreboard whatsoever in that Cork game last year. They're different now. They have the same work rate, they have the same physicality, but they have somebody now who's going to punish you on the scoreboard, or the quality of ball he's given to his inside forwards now is absolutely top class.
Yeah.
So to me, in terms of what your perfect mix is for a forward line nowadays, where you still have you'll have two half forwards and your two inside forwards and your two workers, they have the perfect blend at this stage, I suppose, from...
Because their workers can score.
Absolutely, but as neutrals, can they go to the next level? Do you know, winning another Munster title, they've lost count of them in Kerry now at this stage. It's stopping the Dubs in their tracks. They're one step closer to that now, to an All-Ireland semi-final. It's a daunting experience for whoever comes out of an Ulster final. But I suppose, like I said, as neutrals, for the whole lot of us, it's exciting to see what's going to happen over the next few weeks.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Shout out to Sean Meehan. We mentioned him at the top of the show. Like, I mean, he was very, very good on David. That's it. Paddy Clifford, he was interviewed after the game as well, and he said he admitted that he'd given up hope, or he said he had given up hope, that he wasn't getting on it. And again, you watch East Kerry and you're looking and going, geez, that lad, how is he not able to get...
And UCC, I remember seeing him a few times at UCC. Games, he was the same. He was going well, and he was a real abrasive type player. You would have thought, like, how's he not even on the panel? I know there's a abundance of talent there, but he's different than the rest of them. He has a different narkiness to him. He's very, very much, he just reminds me of what Galvin was coming in.
But David's narky too. Both the Cliffords, they're narky. That's what I like about both of them.
Let them at it. You need that. You have to be able to stand up for yourself days. So that edge, it's there. It's there in your top players. Your Michael Murphy's, these players, they're fairly similar. Con O'Callaghan's, you know, they're abrasive players. They get punishment. They're used to getting punishment, but sometimes you have to dish it back out again.
Yeah, no, they're well able to do that. Right, Aaron, we'll leave it there. That's it for today. We'll be back on Thursday and we'll preview the other two provincial finals. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Cuffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.